In our industry, there are countless articles, webinars, podcasts, and various references that focus on improving indoor air quality, or as we say, IAQ. They all have value and help our industry to improve indoor air quality. But are there aspects of improving the air we breathe that we might not focus on enough? That's what we're going to focus on today in this episode of Straight Talk. And to do this, I welcome two industry experts who are going to help us clear the air and make things better for all of us. I have with me today on the program Dinesh Wadhwani and John Bergman. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having us here.
I appreciate it.
So to start, I'd like it if each of you would introduce yourself and tell us what you do in the industry. Dinesh, why don't you start us off?
So I'm the CEO and founder of ThinkLight Air. We are an air solutions company that specializes in providing air quality monitoring, continuous air quality monitoring for your general spaces to provide validation for all the contaminants that specifically pertain to health. Pathogens, bio load, viral load, chemical load, that are most harmful for the human lungs and for our health and safety. And we connect that to in-room purification devices that are designed to also clean and target those specific contaminants for health in primarily commercial spaces, small, large, and medium, and enterprise applications.
And John, how about you?
Well, I'm currently serve as the Chief Strategy Officer for Heritage Building Maintenance, and more importantly, relative to this conversation, President of SPMC, that stands for Science Proven Microbial Control. We are a company that's developed and licenses an antimicrobial touchpoint program to other building service contractors.
Fantastic. We've set you up as experts in industry. We're going to share thoughts about indoor air quality and what we can do. A bigger picture look at improving the air we breathe. So to get into our discussion, I'd like to start with this question, get your thoughts. You've been involved in many conversations about indoor air quality over the years. What do you feel is often missing in those discussions? And John, let's start with you.
So that's a really good question, Jeff. I appreciate that. Before I get into that, I need to preface this with 40 years of experience in the commercial real estate management business before I got involved in SPMC and in the commercial janitorial world. So I have a little bit different perspective of it. And I think the number one thing that we don't talk about enough and haven't talked about enough over the years is the people aspect of IAQ. People tend to be harbingers of pollutants, pathogens that they bring into their office environments. They come in, presenteeism, I think, is a term that we don't talk about enough. They come in, they're sick, they have a cold, they feel like they have to work, even though they should be at home, and they spread those pathogens throughout the office. Absenteeism is a big deal, a lot of money. Presenteeism really is a problem that's 10 times bigger than that. So if you've got $1 million problem in your organization with absenteeism, you have a $10 million problem with presenteeism. People are our biggest issue, in my opinion.
So what you said there is so important. I think we all, years ago, over the years, you go to work no matter what. You're a trooper. And nowadays, if someone's hacking next to you in the cubicle, you're like, that person should not be here.
Get out.
Dinesh, what would you say to this?
Yeah, that's a great point, you shared, John. And similar to that, right, is here's what we like to just visualize for people to understand is, first and foremost, 80% of the time people get sick, get affected by asthma, allergies, viruses, pathogens, disease, bacteria. 80% of the time is airborne, right? So not to undermine by any means, the importance of hands and surfaces, it all goes together. But the big eye opener here is, well, if we also want to do comprehensive cleaning or we want to capture it all, we can't just focus on hands and surfaces only. And historically in the cleaning industry, that has been, the norm. And the goal of this conversation and the education that we do is if you could just make the amount of time, resources, effort you spend a bit more equitable to the other 80%, you can move the needle really, really big. And this is one of my favorite diagrams I love to show. So as you can see here on this graphic, is it shows that 95% of the air we breathe indoors is recycled air, right? You may have a source of contamination, whether someone could be sick, it could be mold spores, it could be smells, it could be odors. It doesn't matter what the source of contamination is. But eventually, not only does it linger in the surrounding airspace, but it makes its way to the return duct, goes all around the central air conditioning. Less than 5% gets replaced by outside air. It gets mixed and it gets deposited everywhere else in the building. So if you think about it, we are indoors 90% of the time. And we are sharing the same air from the restrooms, from the nurse's office, from the cafeteria. It's all being mixed inside. And that highlights the importance of how, if you're spending your time indoors, you got to monitor and clean for that as well.
What you've done, Dinesh, has made me want to go outside more than you know.
We all should. We all should.
Yeah. So I work in a home office, but many of our viewers are in a commercial building. So what you said makes a lot of sense. Thank you for that.
Sure.
Another point to think about is about the COVID-19 pandemic. You know, it brought awareness to the need for cleaning across the board, surfaces, and the air we breathe. What are some post-pandemic issues that we're struggling with now regarding indoor air quality that have happened in these recent years? And Dinesh, it's your turn to start.
First and foremost, when people talk about indoor air quality and air cleaning, it always gets, conveniently connected to COVID-19 and the pandemic. To me, in my mind, is COVID-19 was nothing but just a trailer, right? Or an example of what bad air can do to a society. That's really what it is. You speak to doctors and healthcare professionals today, they will tell you there's other bigger concerns of air quality, right? COVID is way at the bottom of the list, right? Whether it is more dangerous pathogens like C. diff and MRSA and tuberculosis and flu. But the bigger one, if you on the EPA website today, the top three reasons why indoor air quality is so important is number one, asthma. One out of five people have asthma in this country. One out of 10 people have chronic asthma. Asthma is the number one reason for lack of presence or absenteeism in the workplace. The number one reason for lack of productivity in the workplace, right? And whenever people are aggravated by asthma or get asthma attacks, it's because of airborne particles, right? And the second one, I believe, was allergens and then mold, right? So those are things that are always in the air, always affecting people. And the big misconception is, well, first and foremost, if you want to solve and clean for those things, you have to go down to the smallest level of particle. So the other thing that happened during the pandemic is everyone scrambled to buy your traditional air purifiers that you could find in the Best Buy or Home Depot or something. Those were all designed, the street game used to be called, if you remember, Jeff, Dustbusters, right? Yeah, Dustbusters, right? So again, if all of you, all the audience over here, if there's one thing you take away from this, it's this chart that you're about to see on your screen right now. Right, is everything you see in the bottom row is your larger particle that your typical filters, your HVAC filters, your air purifiers will clean. If you want to clean for health, you want to go down to 0.1 microns. That's where disease is. That's where our lungs have no defense mechanism for. Think about bio threats, chemical threats, if you remember anthrax, all those things. It's because the particle size was below 0.3 microns. So it's not a coincidence that the most dangerous viruses and bacteria fall below 0.3 microns. So what the pandemic taught us is if we want to purify and clean for health, irrespective of what you do, whether it's hanging out outside, opening your windows, buying an air purifier, you want to make sure that you're solving to clean the air down to 0.1 microns. So if that's the takeaway, from what you guys learned today, that's the number one thing. So I hope that's helpful, Jeff.
That is helpful. That's something you can measure. and the sciences behind that thought. So, John, what would you add to that?
You know, there's two things I'd like to say. One, I want to build off of Dinesh's conversation about asthma. One, I've been involved with the American Lung Association for 20 some years now, and I appreciate your recognition of that. That is a significant health issue throughout the built environment, right? I mean, it's a huge deal, and the idea of putting visibility behind air, right? We can't see it. We can't really touch it unless you go outside in the wind. You don't really even know it's there, right? So being able to put numbers, put visibility behind what the air we're breathing looks like, what's in it, how it affects us, I think is really critical. I also think that there's a lot of post-pandemic hangover. And what I mean by that is when everybody was out, when offices were unoccupied, there was a lot of stuff going on, right? We got really excited about air filtration. We got really excited about air exchanges. We got really excited about disinfection. We got really excited about doing things, right? Office occupiers, landlords, building owners wanted to do something to show occupants, to show tenants that they're on it, that they're really getting after it. That cost a lot of money, and that cost has created that hangover effect that now I've got to back down a little bit. Office occupancies are going back up now. I mean, it's not, we're not flying, but we're getting there, right? We're getting some increased occupancies. That coupled with that hangover effect of reducing kind of the cures, if you will, right? Reducing what we're doing to alleviate or improve air quality is going to come together at some point and create another little circle of issues. So I think it's important that we recognize that we can't back down. And I don't advocate what I call the dirty bar rag approach, right? Where we've all been in a restaurant where we see somebody walk around with a squirt bottle of something and a rag that probably hasn't been washed in 3 weeks,
Right.
wiping down our tables so it's nice and clean for us when we sit down there to eat dinner. Now, we don't want that kind of a thing, but we do need to continue to ratchet up our response to pathogens and all the pathogens that are in our environment, not just COVID-19. Everything existed before that, it will exist after that. This is just one part of it. So I really think we need to get, beyond that kind of that hangover effect and start getting serious about the indoor environment that we're bringing people into.
Okay. Well, John, sticking with you on this, what do you think about the focus on HVAC systems? You think there's enough, too much? What's your
I
thought?
don't know. Jeff, I'll tell you, if your only tool is a hammer, everything looks like a nail, right? And that's what I think that's the approach that historically we've taken to IAQ, to indoor air quality. We rely on our mechanical contractor. We rely on our building maintenance engineers to run the building, to get us our air exchanges, and try to get us to a point where we've got the right kind of airflow. And that's how they've managed it. Then we get the Legionnaires. Now we've got another thing to deal with. It kind of has grown, but we're still in that kind of that tight environment of HVAC, and that's important. I wouldn't ever discount how important it is to get, to meet those ASHRAE standards at least, right? Problem with those standards is their minimums. So we design to those minimums, we operate to those minimums, and we really need to go above that, in my opinion. So that's kind of an issue. I think, UV technology is great. I mean, I could talk about this for a long time, coming from the real estate world. UV technology is great, but it's not a cure-all. It doesn't take care of everything, right? You got to make sure that it passes through. You've got people that are using portable units and thinking that's solving the problem. Well, if it's in my office, maybe it is, but it's not going to solve the problem, anywhere else, right? So it's photocatalytic oxidation, another great technology. It's good stuff. If we can build layers, right? If we can build layers, and then we can add visibility to it so people can see that there's improvement, can see what their indoor quality looks like, then we start to win a little bit.
Okay.
So I love the hammer. I
If
love
there's a
them.
nail.
Right, but I need a screwdriver. I'm going to need a wrench. I'm going to need a lot of other tools.
Well, Dinesh, I noticed you were nodding your head during John's dissertation there. What do you
Yeah.
think?
And that's a great analogy, John. Here's, our school of thought and what we have seen firsthand. We've been doing this for 15 years, right? So we were doing it, way before the pandemic. We were doing it in healthcare facilities and then, of course, with the pandemic everywhere else now. But here's what we have seen. And you mentioned a great point, John, is I like the word hangover. Here's what the hangover looks like, when you look on the streets today, is everyone pushed the envelope on the MERV rating on whatever filters they had, right? Using the same hammer approach. And here's what has happened, right? Most buildings went from MERV 8 or MERV 10 up to MERV 13 because that was the maximum it could go to, MERV 13 or MERV 14. We have solid data that shows time and again, this increased energy bills by about 30%. 30%. Now, yeah, replacing filters once a quarter versus once every 6 months, right? So they would typically change filters, twice a year, but now it's four times a year, right? And that's the hangover. No one budgeted for this ongoing cost, right? It's one thing to make a change. Now, who's going to pay for 30% extra energy bills, forever, right? Who's going to pay for a much more expensive and frequent filter change cycle forever? And here's the part that, that makes me real sad. Despite all the cost of doing that, if you were truly solving the air quality and that was truly helping it, then it could be arguable. Maybe you could justify it, right? Perhaps. But the sad thing is, it's not enough, right? So now there's got to be a better way. And that's the thing about HVAC. Your question, Jeff, is your HVAC system is not your air purifier. It's not. Right. As the name suggests, right, is there for ventilation so that we don't suffocate on our CO2 and to condition the air for temperature and humidity. It's not solving for VOCs, which VOCs, by the way, are so critically important to measure and to deplete. I know you mentioned PCO, right? It takes care of VOCs in the air. VOCs act as the carriers of these pathogens. So many studies show if you can eliminate the carriers of the pathogens, before even getting to the pathogens, you will also eliminate a lot of the transmission of these diseases, right? So taking care of VOCs is something that your HVAC system cannot help you with. Taking care of small particle counts, like we discussed down to 0.1 micron, is something your HVAC is not capable of doing, right? What it can help you do is more dilution, bring in more outside air. That will obviously help, but that's expensive. Right. Every time you bring in more outside air, you got to condition, right? Your thermostat is set to 70 degrees, maybe 40 degrees outside. You got to warm up the air, right? If it's in the summer, you got to cool the air. That's a huge energy liability. So the hangover, as you mentioned, John, is that we are seeing this now. People were trying to do the right thing, right? They were, the heart and mind was in the right place, but now they're dealing with all this additional cost. And then there's frustration. Like, well, Omicron came and more people got sick. The last 2 years, we had the worst flu season ever. Now there's norovirus and things like that. And it's like, I made all these changes, but it's not, it seems to be getting any worse, right? And that's when we say, hey, before you make any decisions, why don't you put in some sort of a monitoring device, right? As you mentioned, John, and let's validate. So if someone tells you, hey, you got to put solution A, B, and C, before I go wild and put this everywhere in my facility, let me do a small pilot. Let me understand the before and after, and let me see what works best for my facility. And adding this element of data or air quality monitoring that encapsulates these metrics, right? The 0.1 micron count, the VOCs, and other contaminants. Now you can make some real data-driven decisions. And that's what makes it real now. Now there's no by guess and by gosh, throwing an arrow in the dark and hoping for the best.
To build on that just a tiny little bit, this is a really important, I think, an important piece of this conversation. I think surfaces are critical too, how we handle vacuuming. Let's make sure that we have HEPA filters in our vacuums. Let's make sure that our cleaning protocols are where they need to be, that you know, that we're not taking the dirty bar rag and using that approach. Let's make sure that we have a touch point program in there. So those commonly touched programs. I like to use the bathroom example. We've all been in a public restroom and watched somebody walk right out the door, right? No hand washing involved. Let's take care of those issues. Let's make sure that that doorknob, that faucet handle, the latch on the stall, let's make sure those areas are protected, have some durable protection on them. So we're killing, so we're taking care of those issues up front.
Let's segue a bit and talk about this next point. And Dinesh, we'll start with you on this. And but it's a quick answer, I think, to this. It's pretty simple. We know that the current indoor air quality perspective focuses on individual parts. We just talked about HVAC. We talked about UV light, different components. Would indoor air quality be better served if we took a more holistic view of improving it? I think your answer is going to be yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to top that off is the NIH product, incredible study that shows that connects surfaces and air together. And to me, that's what creates the ideal ecosystem. So very quickly, here's what it says. If you think about it, no matter how small or light these particles linger in the air for, eventually they make their way down to the surfaces, right? So if you think about it, if you're continuously cleaning the air, let's say you have the right kind of air purification in the room, in your confined space, and you're continuously cleaning the air, you will eliminate surface to surface contamination, right? It only makes sense. And the study showed that you can eliminate surface contamination by up to 66%. So what you just said, John, about all these high touch areas and all these contamination areas, if 2/3 of it could be solved by cleaning the air continuously for cheap, right? Versus having someone to pay $20 an hour to keep wiping and cleaning, but 2/3 of that happens in the air, what could that mean to your facility, right? And vice versa, at the end of the day, when all of these particles land on these surfaces, when you put, you know, let's say your mug of coffee on the table or you stamp, you know, with each step you take, hundreds of thousands of particles gets airborne again, right? So now if your surfaces are clean, you will also directly impact the air quality as well, right? So that, to me, that's the holistic part. The surface and the air is so closely related, and the impact of one has tremendous, you know, significant impact on the other.
And John?
Yeah, I think the answer is absolutely yes. And I'll take it a step beyond maybe the physical environment and add in we need education and we need funding. We need the decision makers to understand the issue, understand what it means to them, to their organization, to their environment. And then we need the funding to back up what needs to be done, right? Prioritize it on the funding chain so that we make sure that we're not just putting in filters, right? We're actually doing something that's going to have some real good. And it you know, it's, we're not talking about a lot of money, but we are talking about getting that in the funding chain. It's important.
Yeah, and very
so good. Absolutely, yes. Short answer.
Just to add on that, I love what you said, John, about the education. When we work with a lot of our clients and users, a lot in the education space or even just in offices, what they want is like a snapshot that they can share with the occupants of the building, right? A new term these days they talk about is occupant engagement, right? Whether it's trying to fill up tenant space in an office or in a university. And if you can see this graphic up here, you know, was such a huge success. Is imagine you walk into a building and you can say, hey, there's been no pathogens or harmful, you know, particles in the air for the last 37 days, right? Or no mold spores in the air for the last 30 days. Or my favorite one, even a 5-year-old could understand, all said and done, the air quality in this space is safer than fresh air outside, right? Yeah. Imagine you walk into a space and not only are you taking the right steps to do it, but you have the data to back it up now. Now you wanted to make it a known fact, right? A known entity. And people walk into a facility and they begin to appreciate this to a whole new level. And then they begin to ask for it, right? Kind of like when, you know, the restaurant ratings came out, right? You know, you see a grade A restaurant and they have gone through the certification, your perception changes. But now you enter an office building. Now you enter a school, a hospital, and you see a screen up there that says my air quality is good. The goal is it's part of the cleaning program, but at the same time too, it becomes a norm. It becomes a norm in almost every building that we walk into. And that will lay a very deep foundation in people's mind of what the importance of air is.
So, all great thoughts. Let's now talk about getting it done. So, with what you've shared so far, to make things happen, who in the building owner, manager, contractor chain of command of a building has the authority to make this holistic approach happen? John, let's start with you. How's it going to
Yeah,
work?
I think it's all the stakeholders, shareholders, right? To me, it's still there's a financial element to this. We've got to have that CFO involved. They've got to understand the return on that investment in productivity and reduced absenteeism and reduced presenteeism, a better indoor air environment's better for their employees. It's a more productive environment. HR policies matter. Right. If I know I'm going to get hurt if I take a day off, I'm not going to take a day off. If I know I'm not going to get hurt if I stay home when I'm sick, I'm going to stay home when I'm sick. The people who are involved. Great story from years ago. We had a, I don't know how many hours, lots of hours, people complaining about their air in the office where they sat, and they were in the middle of a person who wore too much perfume, right? It was a perfume issue. It was a person issue, right? So once you kind of get through all the garbage that's surrounding this and you get to the real core of the problem, take care of the core of the problem. Don't wear so much perfume. Very easy conversation to have. Property and facility managers, the people who operate the buildings that people are in, they need to be part of the solution. They can't fall back on their old tried, true, tested. This is what I've always done. Get past that. Look toward new technology. Think about what the future looks like. How can you make it better instead of just doing the same old thing? That I think it's again, as the building and as we layer different elements to make the indoor quality better, we need to layer the people the same way. We need to bring that holistic view into it.
All right. And Dinesh, your thoughts.
Well said, John. From what we see, right, is the higher you are up the food chain, the easier it is because you have that holistic picture. Sometimes it takes a C-suite or a business owner or executive to say, huh, I can reduce my cost on energy and I can reduce my cost on people and I can improve my absenteeism rates. This really affects my business. Because sometimes, we always work with facilities, but for the facilities end, they may not be given access to the entire big picture, right? So we love to work with facilities people. We love to work with EH&S, environmental health and safety, ESG, are all great, great people who are in charge of cleaning, custodians, facilities management, all those help. But when we can go up to the higher level, the CFO, they actually understand that, well, what are you coming to sell me now? It's going to cost me more money. Guess what? There's actually a real hard cost, hard ROI on this, right? The return on the productivity of people, I'm going to call it even a soft cost. Yes, that's there, but physically in my your balance sheet, by saving you money on filter replacements, by saving you money on energy costs, based on all the changes you did during COVID, the hangover, I'm going to call it, we can come in there and actually improve your air quality for you, prove it for you, and save you money while doing that, right? And when C-suite sees that, or the CFO sees that, they're like, wow, hey facilities, hey EH&S, hey ESG, let's get involved and let's make this thing happen. So that's usually, for those of you hearing, get those people involved because it's not just cost, cost, cost. It is the real ROI to it, and it's actually a way to save your organization a lot more money than you think.
Absolutely well said, Dinesh.
Yeah. I get that. It often looking at those cost savings that will happen is a tougher sell than we'll save you this right now, but how important it is to take advantage of that. So thank you both for those thoughts. We've talked about the people in this conversation already, so we've covered that point because you're right, John. People need to stay home when they're sick, and the pathogens they bring to the workplace shouldn't happen. Let's wrap up our conversation today. Perhaps each of you could discuss what you feel needs to happen next to make better indoor air quality a reality, not just talk, not just a thought, but to make it really happen. Let's start with you, John, on this.
Well, I talked about education, and I think that's a key element here is people need to really understand what indoor air quality means to them, right? They need to understand that it's more than temperature or humidity. The visibility to those unseen pathogens, those things that are in the air that are going to harm their health. They need to be able to see that so they understand it better. Understanding what they can do to make it better, understanding that if they're not comfortable at a certain temperature, they can wear something different. They can bring a sweater if they're cold. They can take a sweater off if they're hot. Understanding that what they do, how they interact with the building makes a difference. I think that's important. We talked earlier about short attention spans. And I really think that while this is good and the people that are going to listen to this understand this a little bit better than the general public, we need to somehow create, and I'm going to say reels or TikTok videos or whatever you want to call it. I'm too old to get involved in too much of that at this point, but I think that's how you reach people through those little 15, 20 second bites of information that they can incorporate, right? That they can understand and they can do something. But education to me is the key. We can do all the physical stuff, but until we solve people's understanding from the C-suite on down, it's hard to really affect change.
John, I don't know. Dinesh, what do you think? Could John be a TikTok star?
I think he could.
No.
Good.
Not gonna happen, guys.
So, all joking aside, good point. That's how people are consuming information nowadays, and the next generation's coming up. That's what they focus on. So, TikTok, yeah, John, we'll talk about that offline. We'll see what we can do to
There you go. You're
get
talking
you
to the right
going.
guy here, John. You go, Jeff.
So, Dinesh, let's conclude our conversation with your thoughts. Add to what John just said. Wrap it up for us.
Absolutely. I mean, to push society forward or to create, any evolutionary changes, I believe there's two things. Education, which you covered very well, John, and the second one is accessibility, right? And one of our missions is just have the accessibility to put in an air quality monitor to know what's going on, period. It's not as complicated as it seems. Is extremely, extremely inexpensive. It's a cheap piece of technology. We will help you. We do free trials all day long, but it's as easy as get a monitor that can measure the smallest pathogen type particles down to 0.1 micron, VOCs, things like that. Purchase it, try one, borrow one, and put them in your space. And the information you will get from that is extremely revealing. You will know what areas are good, what areas are bad, why are they bad, what's causing them to be bad, and you will be surprised how simple the solution may be. So my big point is accessibility, and we are absolutely happy, willing, and ready to assist the entire industry with that. It's just get some data, right? Let's understand what's happening in the space, and the next steps will become that much more easier, organic, and simpler to achieve.
Thank you.